Machete Mate recognizes the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and any indigenous elders of other communities who may be listening today. We stand in solidarity in their struggle towards the colonization and land back. Buenas mi gente, what is good? Machete Mate back at it with a special edition of our program. Usually I read the current events, and I suppose this is a massive current event, but a slightly different format. If you've been along with us or just generally paid the minimal attention to what's going on in the world, you know there's going to be a momentous election down in Brazil. It's already started here in Australia just because of where we are, so there's a smallest community here, but they definitely exist here. So I'm sure they've been voting, but obviously it kicks off officially October 2nd, wherever in the world you are for October 2nd. But before we get into it, if you support what we do and want to want more content here, want to help us again justify to our life partners to be able to spend more time doing this, and I guess justify to ourselves as well, because we're showing the solidarity on our Patreon at patreon.com/machetemate. You get a few little perks there. But more importantly for us, we can justify being able to sit down and produce more and better content, which is what we want to be able to do. But we live under capitalism. We live in a society. So we got to work. Whoa. We got to work. Anyway, my name is Leroy. I'm coming to you from unceded Wurundjeri land down in so-called Melbourne, Australia, here as usual with the homie T. What's good, man?
How's it going, y'all?
And like I said, we'll be talking a lot about exclusively about the election in Brazil. And there's only one person we could have brought on to discuss that with us. One of our favorite people in the entire world, one of our dear comrades, friend of the show and Brazil correspondent, Fern. What's going on, man?
Hey, everyone. It's so good to be back here. So glad, ready for this one. It's always great talking to you guys. And yeah, I'm all good. How's you guys doing?
Yeah, really good. Again, always a pleasure having you. And really excited for this conversation because obviously we always like bringing people who have like sort of the inside knowledge of what's going on. And obviously, as much as we think we might know something, we're not Brazilian, you know what I mean? So those bits and pieces that we might miss is why we need someone like you on the show, which we're more than happy to have you. But before we get into the meat and potatoes, just a quick vibe check to see how everyone's going. We'll kick it off with actually Fern, we'll kick it off with you. What's going on, man? How are you doing? What's new?
So I'm doing good. I'm happy today because my soccer team, Atlético Mineiro, won. We've not been doing good this year. We were champions last year, Brazilian champions after 50 years. This year it's not been a good season, but we won today, so that's good. I'm doing good, excited about the election, so yes, so I think I'm doing good.
Yeah, that's who they beat today.
We play Fluminense, and it's usually a team that gives us a hard time every season. So that was a good one. And again, I think that something that I think all of us has been experienced this week, it's the what's happening in Florida, right? I have a lot of close friends there, so that's very unfortunate, but. I have friends, I have DSA friends from Florida who keeps texting us about it. So, especially my friend Grayson, shout out to Grayson.
Orlando, homie.
It's an unfortunate situation. Again, causes of climate change, right? I think it's something that all of us are suffering.
100%, 1000%. And UT, what's going on, man? You're feeling the effects there a little bit, right?
Kind of. I mean, you know, it's the remnants of Hurricane Ian dragging itself across, you know, northward. So it's just been really gloomy, cold, and rainy here. I mean, it's just, God, my heart goes out to everybody, you know, back on the islands and in Florida. You know, Puerto Rico suffered from Hurricane Fiona what is like a couple weeks ago now, a week ago, and just dealing with mass devastation in the islands, mass devastation in Florida. So it's just a lot of, you know, love and solidarity to everybody back home and in Florida. I mean, it's one of those things where like I feel like oftentimes I feel like the eye of a hurricane, to use a poor metaphor, but it's appropriate, where everything around me in the world is just chaotic and mad and violent and destructive, and people suffer. But like in my personal life, I'm pretty good, you know. I'm fine. I'm generally happy, you know. It's just everything around me, it seems like it's just like a swirling just chaos. So I hope that just a lot of love to everybody back there. How about you, Leroy?
Yeah, so as you know, I actually grew up in Florida. So majority of my family's there. And again, being Puerto Rican, a lot of my family in Puerto Rico. So there's been like a double whammy for the last couple of weeks. So it's been one of those things that like family wouldn't have anywhere to go. So basically, like if there's issues in Puerto Rico, like my grandmother would go to Florida, stay with my mom. Or if there's issues in Florida, go back to Puerto Rico. So like, you know, at the moment she's in Florida. All my family is fine. I've been very vocal with the fact that I grew up in Kissimmee, and we joke around that Kissimmee is like the capital of like the Republic of Puerto Rico, because it has one of the biggest Puerto Rican populations in the world, or concentrated populations in the world. And they're completely underwater. It's very, very interesting because my father still lives in Kissimmee. My mom recently moved to more rural, more country. And I felt like if anything, they were going to get a lot more damage, a lot more effects of the actual storm, just because more rural, fewer services, there's more woodland and stuff like that. But she's relatively fine. It's in Kissimmee that's more developed, that's completely, completely underwater. Just like I was telling T off camera, if you know anything about Florida history, half of Florida used to be underwater. It was all wetlands and it was drained, you know, for development. And Kissimmee was sort of like the northern edge of that. So there's still a lot of rivers, creeks, lakes, retention ponds and all that stuff. So a lot of places for the water to go. And water has essentially run out of places to go. So it's just, everything is just flooded. And this comes after apparently a increasingly wet summer as well. So the soil is already saturated. So that, again, removed where the water could go. So Kissimmee is underwater. So if you can, keep your eyes there. If you can help support in any way, there's, again, piggyback off something Fern said, there's definitely groups of DSA groups down there doing some work, comrades down there. So contact them and see how you can help. Because there's plenty of ways to help as well, because Florida potentially has the worst governor in the entire fucking country. And we know nothing's going to happen there. So yeah, it's on us to get shit done, just like we're seeing in Puerto Rico. It's Puerto Ricans, everyday Puerto Ricans are the ones getting together and putting in the work and the mutual aid work to get things done, because the government there isn't doing shit, much less the U.S. colonial government. But yeah, besides all that, I'm doing okay. My family's all right. The sun's shining outside here. We're moving into spring. It's warming up and everything's happy and cheerful besides work and stuff, but that's usual. Anyway, before I wax poetic more on like the neoliberal order in Florida and shit like that, we'll just get straight into it. So obviously, again, we have the elections in Brazil. I think this is very key to what we do here on the show, because again, like I've said, personally, I've always believed that the way Brazil goes is the way the rest of the region goes, because it's the biggest country. It's, you know, the biggest population. It's probably the biggest economy in the region. And traditionally has been one of the United States' biggest sort of lapdogs in the region, for better or worse. But we have last few years have been very, very dark in the region, and has been very dark in Brazil because of, you know, the presidency and administration of Jair Bolsonaro. They've been very dark, but we're seeing the potential light breaking on the horizon. If things hold as they are now, our boy Lula is set to win, hopefully. And in some of the more favorable polls, he might actually win it in the first round. And as I'm sure Fern's going to break down, that is key to this election. Because if he wins the first round, that's it. It'll prevent future potential fuckery and all that shit that we always talk about in the region going forward, because if it goes to a second round, then anything can happen. Capital is going to tighten its grip on the election, and we know what's going on in the region. Before we get there, though, Fern, if you could you just sort of give us the landscape of the last couple of years in Brazil under the Bolsonaro administration, what he's done or what he hasn't done, and basically why... Where is Brazil now in the lead up to this election?
Yes, no, totally. So, I'm not an expert in Brazilian politics. I'm speaking as a Brazilian working class person that grew up in a working class neighborhood in Brazil. So all these things that's happening in Brazil now is things that I went through, my family is going through in Brazil, and it's very unfortunate. Bolsonaro won the last elections 4 years into an office. I think that something that the first thing that comes to my mind was through the pandemic. I think that the way that Bolsonaro mishandled the pandemic was horrific. I think that Brazil was one of the first countries that received offers to buy the vaccine, and Bolsonaro just didn't. And I think that he couldn't avoid like 400K people to not die. And wow, he didn't. And not only that, but he mocked a lot of the people. He was saying, oh, this is just a simple flu. So this is just the tip of what's been a Bolsonaro government in Brazil. And I mean, I understand that a lot of people voted for him, a lot of working people working for him, because people were looking. He was that guy that tried to, he had that speech of a change. Yeah. People wanted it, some change. So we experienced something similar in the United States, right, with Trump. But again, the Bolsonaro government, brought massive unnecessary death during the pandemic because of his mismanagement of what's going on there. Record-breaking unemployment. The board, it's unemployment is to discuss. That happened even before Bolsonaro, when Dilma herself suffered the coup, and her vice president established a bunch of like labor reforms that was bad for the workers and was very good for the employers, the bosses, because you know that's how they do it, right? They want to benefit the bosses and at the workers' expense. So unemployment is skyrocketing. Hungry, something that was almost gone during the governments of the Workers' Party in Brazil with Lula and Dilma, is back in Brazil. There's people hungry in Brazil. A lot of people going hungry. Inflation, like the prices of everything is going high. So we are in a situation that since the end of the dictatorship in the late 80s, I don't think that Brazil went through a disastrous moment with with Bolsonaro. So I think it's time. I think the Brazilian people are going to show that no more. So that's what we're looking for.
You know, I find it interesting that, you know, Bolsonaro always idolized Donald Trump. You know, he said that. There's some terrible documentaries where you can watch where they were interviewing Bolsonaro. I think it was even before he was president, when he was just a member of parliament and or the Congress. And, you know, he was sitting there like with a, like he had all this American style quiche on there. Like he's someone who very consciously like modeled himself after a kind of Republican Party populist demagogue. And it's interesting how he's governed or not governed the same way. So, you know, he ran on a lot of demented cultural shit, racism, conservative evangelicalism, patriarchal supremacy, you know, reasserting, you know, quote unquote family values. But that didn't, you know, there was violence at the street level. You know, he did, what happened was what always happens. You know, these demagogues whip up a frenzy, and it's the, you know, it's their little stormtroopers on the street that inflict violence on people. But institutionally, it's only through the cops, right? But what does go through, like any Republican, is the economic shit. Right. So like, you know, as you mentioned, the labor reforms, right? As you know, the logging in the Amazon, right? That goes forward. That's immediate, right? Because again, you know, these demagogues, these supposed nationalists whip up all this hatred, and really it's all for profits. It's all to ensure profits, to raise profits and lower wages. And I think it's fascinating to see how this has gone on.
Yeah, no, you were talking about the aggression, right? The violence in the streets not too long ago on the city of São Gonçalo in Brazil. There was a woman, she was pregnant. She was canvassing for the Workers' Party. And two or three Bolsonaro supporters beat her, like they went, they hit her. So there's videos of her laying on the, so it's awful. And exactly like you said, I think that this, you know, this nationalism that they try to bring, this is dangerous, because it's the way that this far right nationalism, this is like country first. Well, it's dangerous. Bolsonaro is bring this back in Brazil. We had that during the military dictatorship, right? And now it's coming back in through him.
Yeah, 100%. And talking about violence as well, like not too long ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, some guy walked into a bar and basically yelled out, "Who's voting for Lula?" And some guy's like, "Oh, I am," and just shot him like right there. Like in front of everybody. Like it's brazen, it's real. It's not like, oh, you know, there's violence in the streets, like in some abstract sense, like this shit's happening like right now. And I think we talked a little bit about Donald Trump and I suppose the American influence there as well. And I think one thing that's very key is the growing evangelical community in Brazil as well. And this, we're seeing a lot throughout Latin America, but in Brazil, it's really taken a hold. And I think I read a number that it's grown by like something like 30% or like almost doubled in the last 15, 20 years. And that's the direct influence from the United States, right? Because Brazil, just like a lot of the rest of Latin America, ostensibly is a Catholic country. If you're going to put a religion, it's going to be a Catholic country. But then we have this imposition or this, you know, evangelism coming through from the United States, you know, tied to capitalism, tied to like US neoliberalism, that is very much tied with the identity that Bolsonaro is trying to project, right? And just like with evangelical politicians that we see in the United States, it doesn't matter what the actions are, it doesn't matter what they say, by virtue of being, you know, following Jesus and being a Christian, they're correct. All these things are just, you know, right, whatever, you know, it's unfortunate, but how can we not vote for the Christian? You know what I mean? And like, I'm seeing that bits and pieces of working class people in Brazil that are directly being negatively affected by these policies. But at the end, they go, "Well, but you know, he's the Christian. Lula's could be some sort of commie, and they're evil," like type of thing. And that's unfortunate. And we see that shit in Puerto Rico as well with Proyecto Dignidad as well. That these are monsters, but at least you know they're Christian. So you know what I mean, which is very, very unfortunate.
I know, and it's funny that you're saying this, because once I was seeing an organizer from a leftist party in Brazil talking about organizing. Someone asked him about organizing in poor neighborhoods and organizing in the favelas. Like, oh, why there's not a lot of leftist organizers within the favelas? And one thing that the guy said was like, people might think that what makes it harder to organize within the favelas is because of organized crime. And it's not. It's because of the evangelical congregations that have such a hold within the people, within these communities, that makes it like hard for, you know, these types of like work, like working class organizing to move forward. So it's insane. And again, I'm not saying that it's all of them. I think it's changing, because A lot of evangelicals are now, even you see on social media all the time, they're saying, we're going to vote for Lula. And this is a good change. But again, you see Bolsonaro with relationships with a lot of politicians who has established relationships within churches. So it's a long battle that we're still going to have to see how it's going to go.
I think this is a great time to think about how, transitioning to discussing the election itself, because, you know, one of the reasons why Bolsonaro is so weak right now is that two of his constituencies are unstable now. As you mentioned, Fern, the evangelicals, you know, there are evangelical groups and individuals who are, you know, breaking with Bolsonaro. There are also members of the bourgeoisie, the upper class in Brazil, who seem to be kind of more, I guess they're sort of, they want stability, right? They're tired of someone, you know, someone who's almost like a loose cannon like Bolsonaro is. They want competent leadership to ensure profits. And now Bolsonaro is getting in the way of what they're really after, right? So his own, you know, major bases of support seem to be, there seem to be division there. And that's, you know, that's always good. I guess we can move into the election itself now, or at least discussing, you know, a little bit about the election. As you mentioned, Leroy, real quick, you know, with the people running for president, if someone reaches over 50% of the vote, they automatically become the president. But no candidate reaches 50%, there will then be a runoff with the top two vote getters later this month. Fern, if you could tell us a little bit about the people running and about the political movements that they represent.
Yes, totally. So first of all, I think I'm going to talk about the one that, you know, it's the person that I've been supporting. I'm extremely excited and emotional because it's going to be the first time ever me as a Brazilian voter, I'm going to be casting a vote for Lula. So that's to me, it's, you know, it's...
I wish you could all see the smile on his face right now.
This is, you know, like Lula was someone that really inspired me into following politics. And again, I was born in a working class neighborhood in Belo Horizonte, Brazil, Minas Gerais, Brazil. And during the Lula government, you know, like on his administration, that I saw a lot of people from my neighborhood going to college, getting their first degree. So like a maid or someone that had, you know, a manual labor was able to send their kids to college for the first time. You see people buying their first homes, people buying their first car, people, you know, so it may not mean much to, you know, the elites, but seeing these things happening in the neighborhood that I lived in, a neighborhood that has, you know, people really struggle through it. You saw the before Lula was the Fernando Henrique's years administration, which he was the main reason that I came to the United States. My family decided to come because of a neoliberal government. The recession was so bad that that's when my parents decided to come. So we have Lula. Lula's coalition is the largest coalition that Lula was put together ever. So I believe it's 10 or 11 parties. It's part of his coalition now. I would say that the main ones, which are the Communist Party of Brazil, which has been a party that it's been always working together with the PT, the Workers' Party. So they've been very loyal allies of the Workers' Party throughout these many years. They had the vice president on Fernando Haddad's last bid when he ran against Bolsonaro and lost. And I would say also another big part of this coalition is PSOL. PSOL is a leftist party that it's made of people that broke from the Workers' Party over disagreements in 2006. Right. and seeing them now being part of this coalition, they have a strong, they especially in the state of São Paulo, they are a strong party. So there are, I know that for many years there were a lot of disagreements, but seeing them being part of this coalition, I think it's just what the left needed in Brazil, and I think it teaches a lot, even for the left here in the United States. It's time for us to, the United States and everywhere, like sometimes we have disagreements here and there, but we have to work together, because if we don't, as comrades, we can disagree as comrades, but you can have debate as comrades, but we have to stay united as comrades, because if we don't, and it's proven, this is showing now that Lula can, one of the big reasons that Lula is moving forward. So this coalition is exciting. We have Bolsonaro. Again, we talked about him. He represents, you know, he's the evil. He's the bad. He needs to go.
Right.
I have the other two. There's the other two main candidates is Ciro Gomes. He's running for a party that is center-left. This party has a historical history in the left. Was the old party from someone called Leonel Brizola, which was a champion for workers in Brazil, was someone who fought really hard for the workers' rights in Brazil. And Ciro just chose to... His game plan, it's been talking bad about Lula, trying to diminish the Workers' Party campaign for his own gain. It's an unfortunate situation. I think that he's losing a lot of support over it. He's missing a big opportunity to be part of this leftist coalition, but he's just showing that he's not going to be part of it. I think the last polls showed that he has 6%, but
wow.
It's an unfortunate situation. And we have also Simone Tebet. She's from, it's considered the largest party in Brazil, which is it's a party called the Movement for Democracy in Brazil. They have, their history comes from the end of the dictatorship. They were part of the democratic, when Brazil left the dictatorship to a democracy. But again, it was also the party that was heavily involved with the coup against the Workers' Party and Dilma. These are the four main runners. There are two other runners that you don't see them being talked about nowhere. But I would like to take this opportunity to talk about them, because I think that they've been extremely important for this race. One is, his name is Leo Pericles. He's actually from my hometown, Belo Horizonte. He's a leftist. He's an organizer. He's, a working class man running. Again, he's not that he has any chance of getting votes, but I think that him being part of this race, bringing up questions, bringing up what's going on with the working class in Brazil, it's been extremely important. Same thing with another candidate. Her name is Sofia Manzano from the Brazilian Communist Party. Because we have the Brazilian Communist Party and the Communist Party of Brazil.
Of course.
So, the Communist Party of Brazil, it's been allied with Lula for many years, but this party, the Brazilian Communist Party, is Brazil's oldest party. Communist Party of Brazil is actually split from them a while ago. So Sofia Manzano, she's running. They haven't invited them for none of the debates, but I think that their two running on these elections is extremely symbolic to what the working class wants and what the working class needs. Again, I'm a petista. I'm a Lula supporter. I would be voting for Lula, but I just wanted to mention them too. I think that them running is important for the left, in Brazil, and it's important to bring awareness to what leftists should be caring for, even the members of the Workers' Party. I think it's important that they be part of this democratic system that we have in Brazil.
Fantastic. And just on that note, say in the event that it doesn't go to the second round, do you think those two candidates will then coalesce support around Lula and the Workers' Party? Or do you think they'll sort of kind of keep asking those questions from the sideline?
So I think that first of all, I think Lula winning on the first round is extremely important, because
right,
if he does, it's gonna be legitimating his campaign, what he's running for. I think it's that. That's the first. Second, I think he avoids Lula and the Workers' Party to have to do any sort of that. This is the way I see it: to do any sort of deals with the third and the fourth place. Because again, most likely will be Ciro and Simone, and I don't think that the working like the a program, a government program for the working class, won't benefit with these two involved.
Yeah,
I would say that I believe that the Leo Pericles and the candidate from the workers, the Communist Party, Sofia. They would critically support the Workers' Party. I think that in the end, they would understand that Lula's victory is at most important now. That's what I'm hoping for. That's something that we will have to see if it goes to the second round. But again, I'm very hopeful that it won't go. I think that we're going to make it.
So it's interesting that the last poll I saw the last poll I saw was at Lula was at 51%, which is just right there to make it past the required 50%. Now, barring that though, it's in all likelihood he's going to come in first with a commanding lead. Assuming he does not make it to the required 50%, we figure that it's going to be him against Bolsonaro in a one-on-one, probably at the end of this month. What are the, the fear is that there will be, elements of the military, elements of the reactionaries, of the reactionary upper class, to, try to steal it. But I guess I'm optimistic on that point, if only because his support among even the upper class in Brazil has started to fracture. Like he's going to basically face the same problem that Donald Trump did in the United States, which is that, he wanted to be the great strongman dictator, but he didn't have the support and the background support from like the upper class, from the military, to really launch his own coup. So he's going to be left, honestly, like just outside naked, basically. At least that's my read of the situation.
Yes, I think we should be prepared for anything. Like coming to what can happen, I agree with you. I think this has been very clear for even with the big media in Brazil. We thought that the big media, the media really supported Bolsonaro when he first ran. And you can see now that I think that they would hoping for another candidate to rise, like someone that would be more close related to, if I would make a comparison, someone more like the Democrats in the United States, someone like a liberal. I think that that's what they were looking for. But again, I think we can never be too sure what can happen. I think that if it goes to the second round, I think that everybody should we cannot spare one vote. I think we need to work hard, canvassing, talking to people, talking to neighbors. Every little vote count. Even the voters for the Brazilians in the United States, Europe, you know, Australia, Asia, everybody, every vote counts. So yeah, but we cannot afford to give Bolsonaro any chances.
Yeah, and again, after all, this is Latin America we're talking about. So who the fuck knows what's going to happen in this election? You know what I mean? Like, if there's anything true about Latinidad, it's just going to be fuckery in elections in Latin America. Yeah. That's the one thing that unites us, right? That's the one thing that unites us. But there's a few things that I think are very, very important as well. I think going back to something you said, T, what capital likes, what like the conservative order likes, is stability, right? So stock markets like stability. They don't like, you know, doesn't matter who it is, if it's stable, that's all they care. And Bolsonaro is proving to be a very unstable person. You know what I mean? Like, for better or worse, he's a very unstable person. So like the military people who should be his allies are like, I don't know about this person. Like all the big businessmen, like they're sort of fleeing. Yeah, to quote what he just said, he's not a stable genius at all. Unlike what Trump said. So this is why they were scrambling to look for someone else, because Bolsonaro at the moment is going scorched earth. Like, he's attacking like the Supreme Court, he's attacking like Congress, he's attacking all the institutions that you would think that a sitting president would try to rally around him. Like, oh, we've had our disagreements, but you know, going forward, we'll unite the La Patria, whatever it is, you know, around us, and to build a stronger Brazil. And like, that's, he's saying that in rhetoric, but on a basis of scorching everyone else, like, all these are the bad people who are keeping me from being able to do my thing. You know what I mean? It's a message of, I mean, not to be cliche, it's a message of hate and division and whatever, which is what he's hanging his hat on. And I think you put it best. I feel like he's being left outside naked in the dark, in the rain with no allies at all. But in saying that, I think if it does go to a second round, stock markets, capital, these people aren't going to support a leftist, you know what I mean, or even remote leftists. So I think they'll rally around this guy and try to put him in his place. And at the, and unfortunately, if Bolsonaro gets reelected, at the first sign of fuckery, I think bad shit's going to happen, and we're going to see a repeat of 1964. Potentially, this is me being a cynical pessimist. But I just don't see them supporting Lula, because like after all, like, one of the big proponents of the coup against Lula was the Democratic Party in the United States, right? We talked about the logging interests in Brazil. That was under an Obama administration. So even a, you know, our hope and change liberal president wasn't about it. So I don't know. I'm just saying.
I don't know. I don't think, I mean, again, I'm no expert either, but I just do not think that there's enough. He doesn't have enough support, and there are no other leaders available that would have a kind of rabid base of support to like encourage a coup. If anything, we'll see something similar. You know, if they do attend things, it'll be like last time. It'll be lawfare. It'll be through the Congress. Lula in this day and age, he represents the good old days, right? Like in people's minds, you know, it's, you know, back then, you know, at least we had Johnny Cash and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Now we have no jobs, no cash. You know what I mean? Like, that's what Lula represents. He represents the good old days now. You know, it's very different than other situations where it's like the conservative tries to run on being on the good old days. No, the disorder was from the right wing. Right. If anything, you know, the fear really, that my concern is twofold, honestly, is that Lula moves too much to the center, right? And yeah. Or, you know, and then also not necessarily what Bolsonaro and the establishment does, but what low level police departments do, yeah. What loggers do, and their own hired guns out in the hinterlands. And what individual right-wing and neo-fascist organizations do in Brazil, because that's the fear, that's the right-wing violence that'll happen. And then it, either in a lead-up to a second run into a runoff, or even, you know, especially possibly, you know, if Lula gets elected.
And now, one thing that we cannot neglect, I think that the Workers' Party was a victim of this before, is if it goes, and it's like Leroy said, if it goes between, even it's a far-right fascist guy like Bolsonaro, and a leftist like Lula, even the neoliberals, you know, the third way people, you know, they say, oh, I'm a third way guy, they're going to side with the far right. In the end of the day, the elites, they rather see a fascist in office than a leftist, and for obvious reasons, right? Like you were saying about the logging interests of the United States can have in the Brazil, but it's not just that; it's the commodities market, it's the oil, especially now oil. Bolsonaro, one of the first things that Bolsonaro did as soon as he took office was privatizing all our oil fields. So it's again, being that it's Latin America, we can never be sure. I think that Bolsonaro is again, and I agree with you, T. I think that he's weakened. I think that Lula is pulling so much support, and I think Bolsonaro, he did it to himself. He's so weak. I think that he's losing support among even his most staunch supporters, you see, among the working class. But we can never be too sure what the elites and the empire interests in Brazil, like the United States, have over in the country. So especially when it comes to logging and oil. So it can never be too sure. I think that for the better, for the worse, the good thing is everybody go to the pools and let's guarantee it. Let's get him on the first round.
Yeah, I agree 100%. But to your point, T, to something you said as well, like you're saying that there's no other conservative person like leader that they could prop up or whatever. But that was similar case in Chile. Before the coup against Allende, like there wasn't like the clear right wing person. It was Pinochet was a cordial general with Allende. You know what? They were chummy. Like when the coup started to happen, Allende was still calling Pinochet, "Hey, look what's going on. Can you help me out?" Blah blah blah. And who takes power? Who did everyone rally around? Fucking Pinochet. So there has to be someone in Brazil. Someone's going to get propped up if that happens. Again, like, this is the last thing I fucking want, obviously. But, like, I don't know if I'm cynical like that. But something like that's going to happen. Or that there's always going to be someone there.
It's funny you mentioned, Fern, you mentioned the interests of the empire in the United States. Several politicians in the United States, including, Grandpa Bernie, have been very vocal as of late about, warning, if basically warning and pleading with his supporters to have to focus on Brazil, what's happening in Brazil. There was a letter passed around in the U.S. Senate signed by Sanders and by several other progressive, liberal Democrat senators about, the dangers of Bolsonaro, the dangers of a unfair or stolen election process. So it's interesting to see this kind of, the great interest that even liberal Democrats, people that are not socialists like Grandpa Bernie, that have, who are fine with the PT, who are fine with Lula, they remember the BRICS, they remember, does anybody remember BRICS anymore, right? Like Brazil, as you mentioned, Fern, is one of the great commodity producers in the world. It's in the top 10, or usually like either the top 10, top 20 of oil producers, of cattle. It is an enormous economic powerhouse, the clear, as you mentioned at the top, Leroy, the clear economic leader in the region, So there's great interest, I guess, even among, progressive leaders in the United States to show some of that international solidarity. As we've seen in other cases in other countries down there during their major elections, it's that international focus that helps these people in country. You know, Bolivia is one of the more famous examples in the last few years. You know, that international tension meant that the fascist coup government, their government was never stable, right? They were able to get the message out that, you know, of violence happening, of, you know, what they needed to do. They were getting that kind of international support. I mean, it was an international incident with the election observers sent by, you know, the homies at the PI. So I wonder if even, you know, the fact that not just Bernie Sanders and the usual suspects in the U.S., among elected politicians, but just regular liberal Democrats are ostensibly, you know, in favorable to Bolsonaro losing. I wonder if that, you know, will have the kind of put a kind of brakes on U.S. imperial meddling in favor of a far right president. I'm still mostly worried about, you know, street level violence, really, like individual fascists, like going into bars and just shooting supporters, attacking canvassers, the cops. You know, Brazilian cops are notorious. They're notorious to just like, I mean, they're, as you know, U.S. cops and Brazilian cops would probably get along very well together, frankly.
Yeah, and I'm glad you took it that way, because I think one thing that we need to talk about as well is what a Lula presidency would mean, or at the very least, what Bolsonaro no longer being in power would mean. And I always think about like the Afro-Brazilian population. And one thing we need to remember is, I think outside of Africa, Brazil has the highest population of people of African descent, highest population of Japanese descent, Lebanese. Like, it's a very... We talk about melting pots. We talk about diversity. Brazil is, because everyone thinks, have the notion of Brazilians being like this sort of one mestizo population and it's not whatever, but it's one of the most diverse places in like the world, especially in Latin America. The indigenous population, also the more visual, more vocal LGBTQ population as well. Like, I think almost in every race in the country, we're seeing like an LGBTQ person like running and like being more vocal. The trans community is coming out in the streets. And I think that is a reaction to an out and out evil, homophobic, transphobic piece of shit that Bolsonaro was. And obviously Lula won't be perfect on that, just because, again, this is the societies that we live in. And I think it's important to talk about that as well, like the criticisms of Lula, but also acknowledge that, like, for a survival, like, aspect of for their very survival, like, this is something that we need to be like considering.
Yeah, one thing that is worth mentioning, Brazil is the country that kills more trans person in the world. It's insane. So again, I think that having a president in office like Bolsonaro, who is it's misogynist, is homophobic, his rhetoric against, you know, the LGBTQ community is horrendous. In a country that kills the LGBT community, they have a target on their backs, and having a president supporting that type of attack, it's unacceptable. So and like you said, we've seen a lot of LGBTQ members running for elected positions. I think it's important. I think a lot of the leftist parties, PSOL, is big on running LGBT. There's a lot of LGBTQ members of PSOL running for office from PT as well. Same thing with the Communist Party. And I think this is important. I think it's worth mentioning. And same thing with the women. Again, Brazil is an extremely violent country for women. It's not sad enough, but again, we have a women representation in our elected office is extremely small. So again, I think that it's Bolsonaro not being in office, again, it's a small step, but I think that even with Lula in office and the next administrations, I think that we have a big work to do so we can bring more equality, not only in the fields of politics, but, you know, but as citizens.
So I think at this point, If let's move it forward, you know, we're not going to do electoral predictions for a couple of reasons. First of all, I'm afraid to, honestly. I'm absolutely terrified to predict anything because I hold the fucking curse, apparently. I make a prediction and... Yeah, I have the death kiss. I have the fucking podcast death kiss. I make a prediction and they fucking go blows up in my fucking face. So let's just go with what let's kind of game out what we think or what would you think would happen in a Bolsonaro if Bolsonaro is reelected, and then if it the polls hold true. And Lula gets elected. What do you think happens if Bolsonaro does get reelected?
I think it would be disastrous. It would be disastrous for the environment. Again, Bolsonaro, right. It's not that this 4 years was already disastrous for the environment. I think another 4 years, I don't know if you can ever, if you can, it will be, there's going to be no turning back. I think that as far as the environment goes, the Amazon, and you know, Bolsonaro wants to give away the Amazon and you know, burn everything and exploit everything to the max, make it give it to the agribusiness. So right. that would be bad. We already have people struggling with hunger in Brazil, the violence that we have in Brazil. I think that a second term for Bolsonaro, it's going to proven to be disastrous. It's going to be, I don't even know what to think. I think that if that happens, I feel that more than ever before, I think organizers would have to do something that we have never done since the dictatorship. We will have to upscale our organizing. And I'm not even saying just Brazilians in Brazil, with even us Brazilians in the diaspora, us here in the United States, Australia, it would be the time for us to, you know, do something that we've never done before, if that comes to happen. A Lula administration, I think it's going to give Brazil what Brazil needs. Right now, we need to solve... I think it's one in three Brazilians are going with food insecurity. I think that's the first thing. We've been seeing Lula talking a lot about that. So I think that this would be the first thing that I would like to see Lula working on. I believe that he would. I think that the Workers' Party has a really good opportunity in their hands to really look into, working class focused policies for employment, strategic industries within the country, with the oil, you know, the environment. And I think that the PT is the best positioned party with Lula to do these things. I think that us as voters, we have to, if Lula goes to office, we have to make sure that he follows through, right? I think that our organizing doesn't end when the polls, let's say tomorrow in 2 weeks, says that he's victorious. I think that it's an ongoing thing. I've been even talking to Brazilian comrades here. I was like, our work is not going to be done with just this organizing to elect Lula. It needs to go beyond. This is a project, right? I think that believing in this project is important. And again, I think something that it's been different this year was, so last year, last elections, you saw Bolsonaro supporters all over here in the United States. I went to vote in 2018 and it was scary. There was so many Bolsonaro supporters on the streets and it was a very hostile environment. Last Saturday, I was in New York with like around 100 Workers' Party supporters. We did an action in the Union Square in New York City. I think that now you see support. I think that even here in the United States, where Bolsonaro had a lot of support from the diaspora, I think we're flipping things. I think that I'm excited to see a lot of Lula supporters here. So if we were able to do this here in the United States, I think that our comrades in Brazil are really doing the work to elect Lula. So yeah, I have a good feeling about tomorrow. But having a good feeling, that doesn't mean that we can relax. I think that we have to go, you know, full on, full throttle.
Yeah, I agree with all that. It's unimaginable. Like, it's hard to imagine what a re-election of Bolsonaro would look like, because we're talking about an erratic, vengeful, petty person. Like, this man is bound to just, out of pettiness, go to the Amazon himself and light fires. You know what I mean? And like, I mean that literally. Like, this motherfucker, who the fuck knows? So it's imperative that this man does not get reelected. And that is to say, of course, that like, elections aren't the end all be all. And I'm glad you brought up the point that this is when the work starts, right? Whenever we talk about like a free, independent, like socialist Puerto Rico, it's not about like that happens, we wipe our hands and, you know, we've won. That's when the hard work starts, right? This is that step one. That's when the work starts. If Lula gets elected, that's going to be the start of undoing like horrific policy, undoing a culture that was built over the last couple of years that had been festering, you know, for ages. So that's when the work starts. You know what I mean? And to your point as well, like, that's really good to hear that you're seeing all the Lula support in the United States, because I think I mentioned it prior to the referendum for the constitution in Chile, that if you have a look at elections, at the foreign votes during like Latin American elections, they always lean left, except for the United States. The diaspora in the United States always leans right. Everywhere else, it's always sort of left-leaning. So that's a positive step. But in saying that, Miami's still Miami. So, you know, who fucking knows?
And to all the organizing that we've seen here, I've been a little bit involved. That is, we have a comité de luta, like a committee that's doing campaign to Lula. I have to give... I want to take this opportunity to give them a shout out. It's a committee made of comrades from New Jersey, New York, and PA. Miriam and Natalia, they are the ones who it's heading everything. They are members of an organization called Defend Democracy in Brazil. Like, phenomenal organization. They do such a great work organizing New York City. So shout out to them. I think that... I've been to a lot of actions that they put together. I've been working together with them. I think they are a small part of all this changing that we've seen here in the United States, that to me it's been like eye-opening. And so, yeah, it's good to see. It's a good feeling to see that we are able to do a small contribution here in the United States to change the vote, like we say. We changed the vote from Bolsonaro to Lula, and that's been great.
All right. I mean, that is fantastic to hear. And I you know, all the solidarity to you and your comrades up there. I think we're getting close to the hour mark, and I guess we'll wind it down now. But I will do a round of final thoughts. We'll start with Leroy, and then I'll go. And then, of course, Fern will give you the last word. What final thoughts on going in?
Again, not to make anything definite, because I don't want to curse anything, but inshallah, Lula wins in the first round, just because the unpredictability of a potential second round. You know what I mean? And I think Fern made a great point that, Even if he wins in a second round, that'll come at the expense of, like, I hate to use the word, but like, purity in the policy. Like, it'll have to be a lot of compromise to get over the line. And I think him winning in the first round will be a rebuke of people saying, like, oh, he can't do it, of like leftism or of whatever the propaganda is, saying like, this is how popular my policies are, this is how popular this is what the people actually want, so this is what I'm going to get done. It's sort of that whole, you know, rhetoric around like having a mandate. He'll have that mandate to put into place the things that he wants to put in, that the PT wants to put in for the Brazilian people. So I think that's my takeaway, that's at the end of the day, what we want is for Bolsonaro to no longer be president. However that happens, needs to happen, but for the sake of moving forward, for the positivity moving forward, for things that we want to take place, to be able to take place the way we want them to take place, it's imperative that he wins in the first round. And again, and that'll come down to all the work, the wonderful work that Fern mentioned. It's been heroic, of everything that's been going down. T, how about you? What do you reckon?
My final thoughts are quick and brief. It's like you said at the top, man, as Brazil goes, so does the region. So lots of love and solidarity to the comrades. And Fern, we'll leave you with the last word for content itself. Go for it, my man.
I'm excited again. I will be going to New York to cast my first ever vote to Lula. So I'm excited about that. Again, I think that the support of the whole international community is important right now. So it's not just for Brazil, but you know, for the whole global South and workers everywhere. So the support and solidarity that comes from people from all over the world here and workers here in the United States too, it's extremely important. And yeah, my final thoughts would be, one thing that I really would like to take this opportunity is, if you can, help out with the efforts with what's going on in Florida. I know that DSA Mutual Aid Working Group is are looking for volunteers, are looking for donations and help. So check them out on the Twitter, help us out. Same thing with the DSA International Committee, which I'm a member of. We have a delegation of DSA comrades in Brazil right now, representing the U.S. left in the Brazilian elections. So give them a support too. But other than that, it's tomorrow, election day. I'm excited about it. I'm feeling good. I think that we're going to make it the first round. And yes, it's going to be great. And it, as always, it was fantastic to be here with you guys, talking a little bit about Brazil. And it's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to be here. So thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you. Obrigado, Fern. Boa sorte, Brazil. So hopefully everything works out. Again, just a quick mention on Florida. Pay attention to what's going on there. If you care about Puerto Ricans, you have to care about this, because that's, you know, we're the biggest community there as well. And again, there's a massive Brazilian population in Orlando as well. So shout out to the homies there. Fern, we can't thank you enough for coming in and giving us the perspective and some insight into what's going to be one of the most important elections of our time, of our lives, of the year, whatever, you know, always that whole, like legit. So again, thank you for coming in. Everybody pay attention, keep eyes down there, and hopefully the PT and the left coalition down there can pull it off in that first round, because that'll be momentous. And then hopefully we see the pink tide resurgence continuing in Latin America, and hopefully we see some of that down in Puerto Rico as well, in our anti-colonial efforts down there as well. Again, like I said at the top, if you support what we do here, please consider showing your love and solidarity on our Patreon, at patreon.com/machetemate. We'd very much appreciate that. If not, we just support you tuning in. Leave us a rating and a comment and a review wherever you listen to us, and help jiggle the what's it called? The
algorithm.
The algorithm. There you go. That's. I'm showing my age. I don't know, man. The algo thingy. The algebra. Whatever.
The algebra.
But cool. Thanks for tuning in. Catch y'all next time. And until then, hasta la victoria.
Later, y'all.
Bye, everyone.